This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Did you know that the Women's and Men's Pro National Criterium Championships are going on in High Point, North Carolina this weekend? It's true, and art is playing a huge role in the festivities. We'll hear more from event organizers Chip Duckett and Jeff Horney on the second half of the show, but first, our associate producer Bethany Chafin has just finished reading a great new book, and she's here to share.
As interest rates for student loans are debated in the House and Senate, Ken Ilgunis' new book, Walden on Wheels, sheds light on the issue of student debt. His travel memoir documents a journey from $32,000 of undergraduate debt through a series of menial labor jobs, adventures hitchhiking across the country, and even a period as a voyageur, retracing an 18th century 1,500-kilometer canoe trip along the rivers and lakes of Canada. Ilgunis later enrolled in a master's program in liberal studies at Duke, but he promised himself that a graduate degree would not take him back into the world of student debt. So in order to fulfill his promise, he modified and lived in his 1994 Ford Econoline van in a Duke parking lot, unbeknownst to the university and his peers. He broke his silence on this method for staying debt-free when he published his story with Salon.com in 2009. His new memoir, Walden on Wheels, tells of all these adventures with honesty and sincerity. I spoke with Ken at WFDD, and he began by describing a meaningful quote he uses in the book. You mentioned a quote, I think it's St. Francis of Assisi. If you could repeat that, because I think it sort of summarizes your book really well and summarizes the categories that you've laid out.
I can paraphrase it for
sure.
So a laborer is someone who works with his hands. A craftsman is someone who works with their hands and their head. And an artist is someone who works with their hands, their head, and their soul. So I guess that's also kind of an arc of my story. I begin as this menial laborer paying off my debt. You know, I'm a cart pusher. I'm a tour guide. I'm a cook. These are just really repetitive menial labor jobs. And, you know, I begin to crave something more. And my desire to go to grad school stems with this desire. And, you know, I want to start working with my soul. And it's funny, like I go to Duke for no clear reason other than just to become a better, smarter person. But what I learn over time is, you know, I'm going there to become a writer. And I was able to use that experience and that education to write this book. So it's kind of this weird sort of Earl Burroughs snake eating itself in which, you know, I write the book to get a sense of meaning and purpose.
You mentioned some of the writers that you were reading throughout the time that you write about in your book. But I was wondering, as you sat down to write Walden on Wheels, which of those writers or new writers kind of inspired you in your writing style?
Yeah. So I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but, you know, as a young male, but I would read some Liz Gilbert, Eat, Pray, Love almost every day before I started writing. Because I just love the way she wrote that book. It's just this wonderful combination of sincerity and self-deprecation. You know, she could be talking about this harrowing, emotional, you know, episode she's trying to get through in one sentence and then, you know, talk about a bowel movement in the next and, you know, it'll make you laugh and cry. And I wanted something like that. You know, I really love the comic writers like David Sedaris, Bill Bryson, J. Martin Truce. These are great comic writers, travel writers. But they don't have that sense of sincerity. It's not about a personal journey. You know, they're just talking about something funny that happened to them. And I wanted this book to be something more, something, you know, something that'll sit with you a little bit longer after you turn the last page.
So what did your writing process look like? I know you mentioned having bought a journal during your time at Duke. Did you write daily? Did you sort of sit back after all of this, after those 4 or 5 years, and kind of start from scratch?
Definitely not from scratch. So this is sort of unusual, but me and my best friend, we would trade emails on an almost daily basis. And if we were going through a hard time, sometimes it was 2 or 3 times a day. And this was just us trying to understand ourselves, our world, our problems. So going all the way back to when I was a senior in high school, I have this huge archive of emails detailing my thoughts over the years. And not only did this help me become a better writer, it's the only thing that helped me become a better writer, but, you know, I could draw from these thoughts and bring them into the book and give it an unusual degree of authenticity. Later on, I'd get a blog when I started to go to Duke, and it was the same sort of thing. You know, I had all my thoughts and what was happening to me then. I was able to bring the book to life because I had just these rich details about what sort of tree I was parked under and the conversations I was having and the courses I was taking. So a lot of the book was sort of already written, but I did spend another year and a half working on it, kind of enriching those things, using the luxury of hindsight to, I don't know, just make it richer.
You had to keep your van dwelling a secret for a while at Duke. And you talk about some of the loneliness that came with that. And now I think about what was once a secret, now it's published for everyone to read about in all its detail. And I wonder if that's sort of a strange juxtaposition.
I mean, it's strange, but it doesn't affect me much at all. It's funny, like I have a blog, I have a book, I'm on the radio right now, you know, I've been on TV, and you get the impression that I'm this terribly extroverted person, but it's actually the exact opposite. You know, I spend almost all of my time alone and in silence, and that's kind of how I like it. I like reading and writing and gardening and going on jogs and hikes and that sort of thing. You know, it's not a big deal when I share my life with the world at large because there's no consequences of it for me. Like, I don't, like, walk down the street and people notice me. I don't walk down the street. So it's just not a big deal. You know, it's just like I'm almost emailing Josh. It's just something for him to read. And I just kind of feel disconnected from my audience, which is nice in a way because I'm able to maintain that solitude and that sense of privacy.
So if you're not walking down the street these days, where are you walking? What are you doing?
Yeah, so I live up in Stokes County, North Carolina, on a tiny farm with a retired newspaper guy, and we kind of live as monks there. We have 7 chickens, a garden, an orchard, a whole bunch of forest land around us, and, you know, we both focus on our literary projects, and it's a really quiet monkly life. It's not always that way. I'm often going off on adventures, but that's kind of my home base for now.
You talk about going off on adventures, and I know you recently, last year maybe, you had
this past
adventure.
Fall and winter.
Could you tell us about what you did and
yes,
where you went?
So I walked across the continent. I walked 1,700 miles from about Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, all the way down to the Gulf Coast of Texas, and I was tracing the proposed route of the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. That oil is coming from northern Alberta, the tar sands, which you know, environmentalists are concerned about for good reason. And I thought I'd walk the whole thing. And to walk it, you'd have to walk across private property. So I basically trespassed across the continent, walking hayfields and cornfields and cow pasture and grasslands. And it was a wonderful journey.
And are you writing about that currently, or do you plan to write about it?
I'm writing my second book right now. I'm going to call it Trespassing Across America.
Comes the morning when I can feel that there's nothing left to be.
So outside in our parking lot right now is the very van that you write about.
So I still have it, and you know, I probably should get a different vehicle because the gas mileage on that thing is awful, but there for sure is a lot of sentimental value with that van, and it's hard to think of my life without it. We've been through a lot together.
Tell us a little bit about the van.
So it's a 1994 Ford Econoline. It's got this really vulgar fade. The top is burgundy, and it kind of turns into black on the bottom of it. It's got lots of dents and chip paint. Some of the tint on the windows is peeling off. It's not the prettiest thing, but it's been trusty. I've probably only put like 11,000 miles on it over the past four and a half years, but it runs really well. So it's my Walden on wheels. It's my little cabin, but a van. But it's also just the sense that, you know, it's not just the van, but you can carry this simple lifestyle with you wherever you go.
So obviously in the book, at times you know that you're experiencing things that will be great stories. Was it obvious to you that you wanted to write these things down someday? And was it understood that maybe it would become a book even?
Well, when I went to Duke to live in the van, it was primarily just to get a graduate education. I think I recognized deep down that this could be like a story someday. So that was always in the back of my mind. And I always wanted to be a writer. So a year goes by and I'm in a travel writing course and I write about living in my van. It's kind of like a big coming out moment because I have to read my story aloud to fellow classmates and they like the story. My professor loved the story and she said, you know, Ken, you should think about publishing this. And, you know, I thought, do I really want to, you know, expose myself to the country at large and, you know, tell them I'm secretly living in a van at Duke? I said, you know what, why not? I'm sick of keeping a secret. I have this great story. We were in the midst of the Great Recession and people were buying homes they couldn't afford. So I thought, you know, a story about frugality and living simple, it would be pretty timely. So she had a connection at salon.com. I wrote the story for them. And before it was even published, before it even showed up on their website, I got an email from a literary agent in New York City saying, why don't you think about turning this into a book? So, you know, before I even published my first ever national article, I'm getting propositioned by an agent to turn it into a book. So my life is just, you know, I'm thrilled upside down, you know.
It's not how it works for most writers. I hope you know that.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little more of
That's
a
great,
difficult slog. At first, I think, is living in a van even that exciting? I shower at the gym, I cook a meal in my van, I hang out in the library, I go to sleep in the van. Except for a few moments of drama, there's really nothing too extraordinary about living in a van. It's really just living like in a mini dorm room. But I thought about that agent's proposal more and more, and I thought, you know what? You know, if I tie in my past, if I tie in paying off my debt, tie in my motivations to living in a van and kind of structure it as a travel memoir, as, you know, adventure travel, then there might be something worthwhile here. But I'm still a student. I'd only been in school for a year and I still had another year and a half to go. And I almost thought about dropping out to write this book, but there just seemed something kind of wrong about that. And my instinct said, no, you're a student, stay in school, worry about the book later. And that's what I did. However, I always had the book in the back of my mind. So I took courses that would kind of help me prepare for that. For instance, I took an independent study and I called the course Student Debt and the Self. And I just kind of looked at debt from a philosophical angle and tried to understand what debt does to the human soul. And I also took two writing courses over the course of that year. For my final project in my last semester, I wrote the book in just one semester. And that would eventually become the real book once I edited it 7,500, 200 times or so. Over the course of this year and a half, I'm kind of making some sacrifices. That first summer, instead of going back to my Park Service job up in Alaska, where, you know, I'd make 12, 13 grand over the course of the summer, I decided, no, I'm going to work on a book proposal that summer and work on an independent study. So that was the first big sacrifice. So that didn't leave me with much money for the next year at Duke. So my final semester, I'm writing the final project. I'm writing the book and I'm running out of money. My whole goal was to graduate debt-free. And if it wasn't for doing 8 MRI studies in which I had my brain scanned in the last week, I might have gone into debt. So I ended up graduating with about $1,000. And, you know, I begin to second guess whether I want to write the book or not because, you know, I'm broke. I'm 27, 28 at this point. You know, should I kind of get serious and get a real job? And, you know, I'm kind of just battling with these thoughts. And I decide, you know what, I'm just going to go all out. I'm going to write this book. So I move up to Coldfoot, Alaska, where I talked with the previous boss and he hooks me up with a writer in residency. I promise to work one day a week. He'll give me free room and board. you know, I was just really excited. I was writing my book. I was a writer in residence. And I wrote my first chapter for the book. I had it edited and I sent it to that literary agent who I'd kept in touch with over the past year. And he stopped returning my emails and calls after I sent him that first chapter because it was raw. It was raw for sure. And he probably thought, like, this guy can't write a book at all. So I was devastated. That was my only link to the publishing world. I, I had $1,000. I wasn't getting paid to live here. I'm writing a book, and you know, it just looks like an impossible feat now. So, I kind of go into this depression that summer, and I just really begin to question my ideals and my values. Did I make the right decision? It's like I'm paying for all my idealistic sins because eventually I was so broke I had to start working at this truck stop again. So I was kind of on this Scrooge-like tour of my past, revisiting just these menial jobs. Like I become a tour guide again. And then the camp manager asked if I want to wash dishes, except this time it's going to be in Dead Horse, Alaska, which is probably the most miserable place on earth, right next to Prudhoe Bay, the oil fields. After that, I'm like, I'm going to get the hell out of Dead Horse and I'm going to start this book again. And I found some literary agents after that. I moved back to North Carolina, really focused on the book. We submitted my book proposal to 17 publishers and we got an offer, and everything's been good since then.
I'm sure you've gotten feedback, but what's some of the most striking feedback you've gotten?
Yeah, I get plenty of emails and Facebook messages, and I don't know, they're all very touching and heartwarming. I think they see me differently than I see myself. I almost feel like Chauncey Gardner in that film Being There. I think there was this short story as well in which this simpleton is perceived to be this presidential figure, and you know, he doesn't even realize what's going on. And it's kind of the same thing, like people see me as some like adventure Henry David Thoreau of the 21st century, and I just feel like someone who likes watching the Buffalo Bills and drinking beer and watching Game of Thrones occasionally, and you know, sometimes going on an adventure too. I think we need symbols and figures like that. So if they want to think of me that way, so be it. Go forward and reverse.
Author, blogger, and adventure seeker Ken Ilgunis. His new book is titled Walden on Wheels, On the Open Road from Debt to Freedom. You can find out more about Ken on our website, wfdd.org. Once you're there, click on Triad Arts Weekend. You can find links to Ken's blog, information about his recent hike along the proposed route for the Keystone XL pipeline, and links to his other publications. Out here
Triad Arts Weekend, associate producer Bethany Chafin. I'm David Ford, and we've got bicycles, bike art, vintage bikes, and a first for North Carolina, a USA Cycling National Championship right here in the Triad. That's coming up just about 60 seconds from now, and Mr. Peter Karoff is back at the keyboard with Understanding Classical Music. Today, he'll be talking pianissimo, fortissimo, and everything in between next when Triad Arts Weekend continues.